This gospel passage is taken from chapter 15 of Matthew's gospel. Jesus left that place and went away to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And just then a Canaanite woman from that region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us." And he answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." He answered, "It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's tables." Jesus answered her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed instantly. The Gospel of the Lord. We never know how to handle this particular passage because Jesus seems to be doing the exact opposite of what we expected he would be doing when somebody comes to him for help. I think it's important to recognize a little bit the background to this story to understand more fully what Jesus is doing, I think. Shoot me, but it's just my thought. About 1,000 years before Jesus, if you go back to the books of Joshua, after the Exodus, Moses finishes his trip and hands his reign over to Joshua to lead the people into the Promised Land. And they go into the Promised Land with the mission to eliminate and eradicate all the people who live there so they would be able to occupy the land. The story of the walls falling down at Jericho, you know that story, the song, comes from that period, where they go in and they eliminate the Canaanites. It was the land of Canaan, and they came in and occupied it. 1,000 years later, you have a situation where Jesus is going to Tyre and Sidon, which is part of the old Canaanite country, and in which there's kind of an enclave of Canaanite people who still live there. Now, just to bring us currently, what you have in terms of feeling between that Canaanite group and the people of Israel is equal to the animosity and the anger and the hatred that you experience when you talk about the Jews in Palestine. And for the very same reason, the people who were originally there were moved out, and they now occupy the territory in the name of God. That's the background. Jesus comes into that area, and you wonder why he crosses that boundary, because there's animosity and hatred right there on the border. But he goes into that land, and surprisingly, he is met by a Canaanite woman. Now, you got to give a lot of credit to this woman, who first of all must have heard about Jesus or seen something that he had done and therefore has the expectation that Jesus is going to be able to do something for her daughter. And give her her dues. She doesn't back off. She stays with it. And even though the disciples say, "Send her away," she continues. When all else fails, even Jesus is not replying to her, she jumps in front of him and says, "Look, I want you to do something that I know you can do." And then Jesus has this wonderful line. "It is not right to give the food that belongs to the children to feed the dogs." That's not an accident. That's not just something stuck in there to throw us off. That's the age-old appreciation of generational and inherited hatred. Something that continues generation after generation, so far removed from the initial incident that the people who presently live it don't even know why it is there. But it is there. It's a part of their culture. Jesus is able to reward this woman and say to his disciples, and this is the redeeming part of the story, I have never seen such great faith from one who should not have any reason to believe, for one who has absolutely no reason to even confront this foreigner that she knows is the abject enemy of her own people. Because she is able to run Jesus' nose in the idea that even though we may be dogs, my daughter is a human being. Because Jesus is able to hear and recognize her humanity, he is able to say to her, you have such strong faith. Let it be as you wish. It's not a big jump from there to the picture on the front of the bulletin. Now, I try to find things that are pertinent to what we're doing. That picture is a picture taken during the fall of Saigon, through which all of us lived, well, most of us. Not you. And it's an image of a woman who is a mother who is probably being left behind in the fall of Saigon, who has a sick daughter, and who probably is feeling very much like the woman in the story. A person who is being confronted by the evil and the anger and the rejection of a nation that now is going to occupy them. There are even more closer images to the woman in the story. The mother whose daughter was killed last week during the protests in Charlottesville was able to stand at her funeral and make a powerful statement that you killed her to silence her, but in fact you have magnified her voice. Every one of us knows that what is happening, excuse me, in our country is kind of a, not kind of, it's a very difficult situation because we believe that everyone has a right to speak. Everyone has a right to his or her own opinion. But what about when the clash takes place? You know, we've been able to live very silently and comfortably without any riots since, I guess, the 1960s. There haven't been a lot of protests. Oh, the pipeline for the Native Americans. Maybe a few little pop-up things. But as a nation, our attention hasn't been drawn to the issue at all for so long that in some ways, I know I have, I'll speak for myself, I have become silently kind of accepting of what is. Not always knowing what is to be what is. I thought, and if I look around the area, that people of color have made all kinds of advances. They're in the corporate world. Some of them are in leadership roles. They're certainly in Congress. There's people making inroads, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's been a lot of progress made in terms of unity, in terms of understanding and acceptance. But I don't have to go far than the nightly news to see the tragedy that goes on in some shooting in some neighborhood where the people once again are terrified for their children and their safety because of gun violence. And interestingly, it seems those neighborhoods are among the black community. It seems. I thought that we had made a lot of progress since Martin Luther King, since all that has taken place in the last 40, 50 years. But I heard a man from Mississippi yesterday saying with all faith and with all power, you think everything is good. You don't live where I live. You don't live where most of us live. The concentration is very heavy in the South of the black communities. And they are still being subjected in quieter ways, but to the very same thing that we thought we eradicated years ago. Here's a little something I did with myself yesterday. I'll do it for you. See how you feel when I say this, when I say these words. First word, Jewish. Just pay attention to your feeling, your initial reaction. Jews. Transsexuals, immigrants, Mexicans, Palestinians, jihadists, Muslim, black, African, Arab, I find in myself that I can stand with Jesus and say, absolutely, there is no room for hate in my life. None. I cannot put together hatred in what I believe Jesus and God demands of us by our creation. And how arrogant, because when some of those words are mentioned, or someone comes on and says something about the alt-right, or somehow there's going to be a protest about such and such and so, or somebody has a strong opinion about the president or the Congress, I have a feeling. And the feeling isn't always love. The feeling doesn't always say you really understand. The feeling makes me go back to a very simple principle I learned many, 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 many years ago. That the opposite of love is not hate. Hate is evil in whatever form. The opposite of love is power. I cannot love something over which I need to have power. I cannot understand something that over which I need to control. I have no openness of mind or heart over someone or something that deep down inside me, I need somehow to manage. And I find that there's an awful lot of power being tossed about in some of our societal issues and some of our political issues and some of the things right down under my nose in my everyday life. Somehow I believe Jesus is saying in this gospel, you know, you're all people. You're all human beings. Human beings were never expected to be perfect. Human beings are all flawed. No one of us really has the right to dominate anyone else. Now, because of society, because of the domestication of things, because of graces that allow us some of the freedoms, we have in place certain things that we establish as these are our values, and these are the ways you get those values, and these are the laws that protect those values, all of which is wonderful. But might we be approaching a place where we're forgetting the most important piece? That controlling someone else's thoughts, controlling someone else's behavior, demanding that someone else think as I do, demanding that someone else walk the way I do, demanding that they live with the values that I have chosen, that they share the same faith, the same virtues, and all the same expectations that I have in order to love them, maybe is just not what it means to be human. Never mind what it means to be a faithful person. There are a lot of things being thrown up for grabs, and the United Church of Christ has made a very strong statement. I pasted it on the board so you can read it. It won't say anything unusual to you. You would expect them to say that. But more than anything else, brothers and sisters, the times that we are facing now, unlike the times that we faced in the 60s where I was on the front and I was marching and I was doing all kinds of anti-this and anti-that and change this and change that, and I was out front and I was a rebel and I lived it all out and I said, now we got it right. We are facing something much more scary and much more, what do I want to say, I think, sinister, that's eroding away who we are as not only democratic people, but as people who respect the dignity of humanity. And unless and until we learn how we must, each of us, in our own way, deal with that, we are going to be allowing this to happen. This is not a time for us to sit back. This is a time for us, as Jesus, to go there and face this and confront his own hatred, which he had generationally because of where he came from, living boundaries that were set over things that took place 1,000 years before. We have got to have a voice. And our voice needs to be heard. Because as they say, the only way evil can take over is when good people say nothing. And I have kept this card with me for a number of years. It goes back to the Second World War. But it was part of my bulletin board, all of my priesthood. It has been in my Bible for all these years, and I pulled it out this morning because I live with this. And you probably have heard this before, that this was Pastor Martin Niemöller at the outbreak of the Nazi occupation in Europe. And he wrote this. First, they came for the socialists And I did not speak out because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists. I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews. And I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me. And there was no one left to speak for me. The footnote down here says, prior to and during World War II, Hitler's genocidal Nazi party used variations on the triangle, you know, the little triangle piece, and the Star of David, to identify citizens in concentration camp prisoners according to religion, ideology, sexual preference, and numerous other categories. Red was German political prisoners, communists, and socialists. Black, vagrants and lesbians. Green, habitual criminals. Blue, emigrants. Pink triangle, homosexuals. Brown, gypsies. Purple, Jehovah's Witnesses. And yellow on yellow, the Star of David, the Jews. And when it was happening, so many said nothing. The opposite of love is power. Let us use our power to ensure that love does happen. Amen.